Ladies and gentlemen, the first case today is I versus Gonzalez. Ms. Clay.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Petitioner testified to a detailed and specific account of his extensive political activity. The persecution he has already endured because of that activity, and the persecution he will face if he is returned to Togo. Mr. Ayi corroborated this testimony with multiple letters and affidavits from other political activists with knowledge of his political affiliations, memberships, and activities, copies of articles he wrote for opposition newspapers, the summons for his arrest, copies of both of his membership documents, letters from his family, medical testimony corroborating that his physical injuries and permanent scars are consistent with torture he endured, as well as State Department and independent organizations' reports describing Togo's abysmal human rights record. Not a single one of these credibility or corroborating evidence findings is supported by specific cogent reasons. The IJ improperly ignored or misconstrued record evidence and failed to view the record as a whole. Several of the IJ's findings are mischaracterizations of record evidence. The most egregious one is the timing described in his description of the summons and Mr. Ayi's ability to get a passport. He implies that Mr. Ayi obtained a passport after a summons was issued, when in fact the summons was issued several months after he received a passport. He also tries to claim that Mr. Ayi was able to simply walk on a plane to leave the country, when there's ample record evidence indicating that his cousin had to actually go through all the formalities at the airport for him because he was a security person with the airport. Lastly, the judge concluded that Mr. Ayi had been readily replaced by the state-run institution for which he worked.
Pardon me for interrupting. Was there a transcript of the hearing before the immigration judge?
Yes.
I was unable to locate it.
The transcript for the...
Before the immigration judge.
Yes, yes, there is a transcript. We can make sure that you have the record if it wasn't provided. Mr. Ayi was not readily replaced from the state-run institution. In fact, an offer of proof was put into the record that the school had to send someone to Germany to obtain the training that he received. Several of his credibility findings also disregard or discount record evidence. A good example of this is the judge's determination that Mr. Ayi, his testimony was unconvincing regarding the reasons that he was originally detained in 1993, that is his first of two detentions. In order to arrive at this conclusion, the judge has to overlook a number of very relevant record facts. First, Mr. Ayi testified to other political activities other than just this article. Second, Mr. Ayi testified to LTDH membership, that is a recognized organization. He also had corroborating documents to confirm his membership in this organization, specifically his membership card, and an affidavit from the executive director of that organization. Mr. Ayi also presented State Department reports.
What about the allegation that the documents were either forged or not?
Certainly. Let's talk about the UFC card specifically, because that does seem to be what the judge bases many of his findings on. There are really three points. That's a complicated question, but an important one. The first issue is the cards are not the only indicia of his membership or his activities. If you look at the cards on their face, they simply say he's a membership. This is the date the membership card was issued. But we also have an affidavit from one of those organizations' executive directors. We have two letters from the UFC, not just one. And interestingly, one of those letters was obtained after the merits hearing. He was able to contact the UFC in May of 2004, that's the date on the second letter, and get more corroborating evidence that this is an active member. He's continued to be involved with the UFC. He would be able to show on remand that he's in touch with those people and still works for the UFC. The second point is there is no finding on this record of a fraudulent document. What there is a report from the government forensics laboratory, I believe it's called. All that report says is that there is a paper disturbance on the document. There's an offer of proof in the record, Your Honor, that explains that paper disturbance.
Change the name.
Mr. Ayi took the card back, and he wanted his middle name, because Vicinto Ayi is a common name. Ayi is a very common name in Togo.
Really?
He took the card back and asked that Kouassi be typed onto it. Yes, Your Honor.
I said, really, the common name, your knowledge of the country is deeper than mine. I didn't know it was a common name there.
Ayi is a very common name, yes.
What does it mean?
Ayi is his last name. It would be like Smith in the United States, or Jones.
Or Bauer.
Or Bauer, correct. bringing up the LTD membership card is important, or I'm sorry, the UFC membership card, because a related issue on the record is his sort of general disbelief that Mr. Ayi was persecuted because of his political activities. And that's sort of it's difficult to get to that based on all the record evidence. If you look at the record evidence as a whole, you see that there is this seamless story of political activity from early 1990s until 1993 when he was first detained. And then we have this gap where he's not openly political active. He's still involved with these organizations, but he's scared. He's been persecuted, he's been detained, he's been tortured, and he stops open political activity. In 1998, when he becomes involved again, this time more with the UFC than the LTDH, once again, he is subjected to torture. He's detained again. And then the school activities start with Kadaring and the threats and having his car burned and his office broken into, all these types of things. But what the judge has done is sort of break the record up. He's fragmented it. And a recent case before this court, there's an apt sort of analogy. Says, suppose you saw someone holding a jar, and you said, that's a nice jar. And he smashed it to smithereens and said, no, it's not a jar. That is what the immigration judge did. The immigration judge took a very consistent, credible, detailed, incredibly detailed story and broke it apart, found ways to pick it apart so that it no longer had this consistency. It no longer was this tapestry.
You're now into your rebuttal time, but go ahead, do it. Use it any way you want.
I would like to reserve it, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sisko?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The immigration judge in this case made four adverse credibility findings, each of which was supported by specific, cogent reasons based on the record in this case.
Before we go whipping off in that direction, on page 10 of the judge's decision, I quote, therefore the court must rely on the corroborating evidence to determine whether the respondent has met her burden of proof in establishing eligibility for asylum. Now, that whatever he wasn't a her. And that might go as a kind of a typographical error, except he repeats the thing almost immediately thereafter. And in consecutive sentence, he comes up with another one and says her. And I began to get the distinct impression this is a cut-and-paste opinion as opposed to anything that was given complete consideration.
Well, Your Honor, I do believe that those are typographical errors, and they follow a very detailed discussion of the evidence that was presented during the hearing in
this
case.
Any other typographical errors?
Not that I'm aware of. But as I was saying, it does follow a detailed discussion of the evidence that was presented and consideration of inconsistencies and gaps in the account that the petitioner was presenting. And to speak to some of those that counsel for the petitioner has raised, with regard to his ability to obtain a passport, regardless of the particulars of the timing of that, what the immigration judge was focused on was the fact that the petitioner was able to leave the country with a valid passport obtained from the government in his name and leave freely through the airport in Togo without being restrained, without being detained at all. And this was during the time when he was politically active, when he contends that he was politically active. So
how do you discount the fact that his cousin was head of security at the airport?
You know, this is also the cousin who told him when he pointed out the summons that had been issued for him not to contact him and not to speak to him at all. So
is that surprising to you?
Well, it's not surprising that he would tell him not to contact him, but it also undermines any explanation that the cousin was then able to somehow ferret him out of the country undetected.
Why is that? I don't want you to bother me, but I'll take care of the problem.
Well, there's no indication in any of the either documents that were submitted or in the testimony that he actually was able to ferret him out of the country. All we have is a document that says don't contact me, and evidence that he was able to leave through the airport with a valid passport.
I thought the petitioner testified that his cousin got him out.
We have the petitioner's testimony. Yes, Your Honor, but
what goes against that?
The fact that his cousin had stated to him, don't contact me.
That doesn't strike me as being odd at all. I don't want to be seen in your presence, but I'll take care of the problem for you.
Certainly, there is a plausible explanation for that, but the immigration judge looked at the fact that there was no corroborating evidence to show, other than the petitioner's testimony.
What kind of corroborating evidence would you expect?
Some affidavit from the cousin.
He's in a great position to give an affidavit, isn't he?
Well, and in addition to that, though, this is not the
Nobody
only...
Nobody else confessed to the crime. Go ahead.
This is, Judge Bauer, this is also not the only incident where the petitioner was able to travel freely in and out of the country during a time when he was politically active. Counsel for the petitioner has described this time period where he was disengaged from political activity, but the record reflects that for a time period when he was, by his own testimony, politically active in an opposition party, he was still able to freely move in and out of the country without being detained and under his own name. And with regards to the identification card that had been altered, the evidence showed not simply that there was a middle name added to the card, according to petitioner's description, but that the paper had been disturbed underneath that middle name, which suggested that something more than just typing in an additional name at a later date occurred, but that that the name had been altered.
How about an erasure and somebody putting in the correct middle name?
Certainly, that is a possibility, but
the probability?
The probability is that this common name, the Smith of Togo, could be anyone's identification card for that political organization, and the middle name, which would be unique to petitioner, the existing middle name was erased and his name was added.
But he had other documentary evidence of participation in this organization, this political party, so what difference does it make?
And the immigration judge found that documentation did not explain the fact that this name had been altered on the card.
Why does it need to? If the point is whether he belonged to the organization or not, if there's alternate documentation of that, then isn't it kind of trumping the evidence up to make a point that it doesn't bear?
The immigration judge looked at that document, found that while it said that he was a member of the organization, it didn't give specifics about the timing of when he was a member of that organization, and it could not serve to explain what appeared to be a fraudulent document that had been submitted. And in terms of evaluating...
Nobody said it was a fraudulent document. They just said there appeared to be some paper disturbance.
Well, it appeared that it had been altered.
But the explanation for the altering is not unbelievable.
The explanation that the immigration judge drew from the evidence...
No, that's not an explanation. It's a decision. The explanation came from the applicant, and he said why it was there was the wrinkle.
Right, and there was no corroboration of that explanation from other sources, namely this letter submitted from a member of the organization. Now, the fact that he was able to travel in and out of the country, even in 1998, after he became politically active in the UFC, according to his testimony, suggests that he was not being detained because of his political activity.
Why would that follow? If they don't like him in the government, what difference does it make if he travels outside the country?
Well, the fact that he was able to travel freely in and out of the country, the immigration judge focused on several factors. One, that in traveling out of the country after he had supposedly been abused and persecuted, he did not seek asylum in the United States at that point, but also that he was able to return under his own name into the country without being detained in any way, and then was able to take up a post at a state-run school.
Well, they only detained him on his political activity, and he ceased that for a while after he, at least his statement is, he ceased after they tortured him.
And that he resumed that political activity and for a period of, I believe, 9 months or to a year, was politically active in an opposition organization, according to his account, and during that time made trips out of the country and returned to the country. He also, shortly thereafter, was able to take up a post at a state-run school, and contrary to his claims about being harassed while there, he was never fired from that institution and could not explain how anyone at that institution would link him to any articles that he had written for opposition publications. That was another basis for the immigration judge's credibility determinations, that all of the articles that the petitioner pointed to were under a pen name, and that he was unable to provide any explanation of how anyone would connect him to those articles.
Well, what about the letter from the director of the publication stating that he wrote for the publication?
All that says, Your Honor, is that he wrote for the publication. That does not establish any evidence that those in the government or those who allegedly detained him and tortured him knew that he was writing for that publication, knew the pen name that he was using to author those articles. And, in fact, there was evidence by the petitioner's own admission that he wasn't even aware that that article had ever actually been published or that copies of that article were disseminated. Unless there are further questions, I'll simply ask that the court affirm the decision of the Bureau of Immigration Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Cisco. Ms. Clay, how much time is he in?
Your Honor, there's so many questions I'd like to address. I don't have a lot of time. I want to get to the pen name issue, because the fact that this record is so rich, there were things that even I missed when I did the briefing. And one of them was that Mr. Ayi does not specifically reference his pen name in the record, but his pen name appears in one of the corroborating documents. It also appears as the author on one of the articles that was listed. So we know that Rodrigue, the pen name that appears on this article and is also referenced in a corroborating document authored by Lucien Massan, who was the publisher of Les Combats du Peuple, the pen name issue is a non-issue now. We know that Rodrigue is the name he was writing under, and we can now link him specifically to the documents that are in the record, and that's huge. The second issue that the government brought up is this free movement concern, and back to this whole issue about the being able to leave the country. It's interesting to me that the government's brief doesn't mention Goncharov at all and doesn't seem to even acknowledge that there are certain standards that apply to when corroborating evidence is required and when a judge can look to corroborating evidence. And Goncharova tells us that if testimony is credible, you don't even need corroborating evidence. But if you look to corroborating evidence because you question credibility, then there has to be a finding by the judge that it was reasonable to assume that the documents were available to the petitioner, and that if those documents aren't available, there's been some indication from the judge that there's a finding that the petitioner's reason for not having those documents is on the record. And it's as though Goncharova doesn't exist in the government's world. There's no mention of it at all. So all of this issue of, oh, he has to corroborate that he couldn't leave the country or that his cousin, we need an affidavit from the cousin. I'm sorry, my time is closing.
No, it isn't.
No, it's not up yet.
Keep going.
Did you have a question?
I do. You read my mind. there was an affidavit submitted from a doctor that examined your client.
Yes.
And would have testified to, or the affidavit corroborated that the injuries that he reported having sustained while being detained, that there was physical evidence of that. And that there was a mention of government objection to that, but I didn't see any conclusion one way or the other about whether the IJ received it, admitted it, considered it.
The only way, I know my time is up, but I'd like to answer this. It's very important in my mind. The judge's opinion is very unclear as to what was actually admitted and what was actually excluded. And this was just as frustrating for me because when I went to write these briefs, I said, well, he doesn't say that he ruled on this motion from the government. As to the medical testimony, what happened was we submitted motions for telephonic testimony from three people. Marcelo Jala, who's the former executive secretary of LTDH. And I don't want to get hung up on that one, but that's astounding to me that you have somebody who can corroborate his political activities live in person and you exclude it. But the medical testimony is just as fantastic. It's, if you read the report, it's indicating that the types of torture he describes, he has scars on his hands. He has scars on both sides of his hands. He has scars on his knees.
So there really was no ruling one way or another?
We can only assume based on the opinion that he utterly disregarded it.
It's not mentioned in the opinion.
It is not mentioned in the opinion at all. There is no record of the medical testimony.
The transcript will reveal that?
Yes. Yes, and, Your Honor, I apologize. We'll make sure the transcript gets over here today if you don't already have it. If I can conclude very briefly, the IJ's myopic view of this record obscures its rich detail, and I think we've discussed enough of the rich detail. Once you view it in that light, it will become clear to you that this opinion by the IJ is not supported by substantial record evidence, and it should be vacated. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.